Chegat Dompar Aikopiank, Mojo Mai Mogacho Yokar, Hautumcho East Frankie Fernandez, Melbourne, Australia, Suntum Kanjo, Goincho Batmio Pawita, Az Febrerachi Vistari, Gelia Sumanat, Ami Sanglole, Koshi, Goyat Municipality, Elisamacho Bova Chalozalato, Ani Ho Bova Zonasa, Municipality of Ward Reservation and Baptin, a Municipality of Ward Reservation, Director of Municipal Administration, Hanekalat, Murmugao, Morgoa, Toshes Kunkolim, आणि काय दुसऱ्या म्युनिसिपालिटीन हे वॉर्ड रिझर्वेशनान बॉबाब झाला आणि विरोधी काँग्रेस पार्टी हाणे आता गोवा बेंच ऑफ द मुंबई हायकोर्ट हातून केस घातल्यात. येता त्या सुमानात हाचो निकाल येतलो. गोवा प्रदेश काँग्रेस कमिटीचो व्हाईस प्रेसिडेंट संकल्प अमोणकर आमकां आणि सांगता.
एक्झॅक्टली जेव्हा नोटिफिकेशन येले रिझर्वेशनचे त्यांना सगळे जण अपसेट झाले आणि स्पेशली अख्खे गोयभर लोक अपसेट झाले आणि स्पेशली आमच्या मुरमगोवा कॉन्स्टिट्युन्सी जे वॉर्ड नंबर 1-9 असा थंयसर एकूय लेडीज रिझर्वेशन करून नसले. सो हेजे लागून सगळी जी बायलां आमची मुरमगोवाची जी इलेक्शनाक रावपाक सोदताले काउन्सिलाक तेंका खंय तरी तेंचेर अन्याय झालेलो अशें झालो. सो तेजे लागून आमी अशें डिसिजन घेतले की बाबा बायलांचेर अन्याय कित्याक. तरी पासून हांवें डिसिजन घेतले की बाबा जर गव्हर्नमेंटान रिझर्वेशन दिवन आले आम्ही जे 33% रिझर्वेशन असं ते बायलांक दितले म्हणजे दितले आणि त्याच्याच बरोबर आम्ही किती केले की आम्ही कोर्टात गेले आणि आमच्या बरोबर मातशे मुरमगो असून आमचे जे पेटिशनर असलेले ते श्रद्धा आमोणकर आणि शांती मांद्रेकर असलेले त्याच्या बरोबर आमचे अख्खे गोयचून 9 जण पेटिशनर गेलेले असा कोर्टात. आणि एक बरी गजाल म्हणतात ती जेव्हा आज ती हियरिंगात येली केस झाल्या ती केस आता ऍडमिट झालेली असा आणि ती जेव्हा केस ऍडमिट झालेली असा आणि हायकोर्टात जी असा ती नोटीसूय सर्व केलेली असा आमच्या इलेक्शन कमिशनांक आणि तसेच आमच्या गव्हर्नमेंट ऑफ गोवा किती बाबा तुमचे किती असं रिप्लाय घाला म्हणून आणि त्याच्या लागून त्यांना मंडे पर्यंत टाइम दिलेला असा आणि खं तरी दिसतं ट्यूजडे एज अ फायनल रिझल्ट येतो. माका टोटल विश्वास असा या ज्युडिशरीचे किती बाबा खं तरी या बायलांक लागून न्याय मेळतो. तसेच अख्ख्या गोयात ज्यांना या गव्हर्नमेंटान आणि त्यांच्या आमदारान मिनिस्टरांनी आपल्याक जाय तसो फायद्याक लागून आपलो फ्युचर पळोवन त्यांच्यानी ज्या प्रमाणे लोकांचेर अन्याय केलेलो असा त्यांना खं तरी ही जस्टीस मेळटले आणि माका
ते भायर मुरमगाव रावतल्यो कांय बायलो उमेदवारांनी बी आमकां हे वॉर्ड रिझर्वेशना बाबतीन सांगले.
Why it is not given for women? हे आम्ही स्थानिक आमदाराक विचारूंक सोदता जे जो युडी मिनिस्टर आसा अशें दिसून येता की हो बायलांक दिलो पूण आमी हाका भिवची ना हे सांगूंक सोदता आनी हे पाटी 2022 इलेक्शनाक कितें ते थोडो आमी हेका शिकयतल्यो.
पावसाच्या तेंपार पणजे तशेंच वास्को ओ मडगांवां आमकां अणमी बाजारांत विकतींक घेवंक मेळटात आनी चड करून ही अणमी आमकां पावसाच्या तेंपार खावंक मेळटात. पूण आतां गोंयच्या सरकाराच्या आदारान चड करून ओल्ड गोवाच्या एला फार्माच्या आदारान आमकां अणमी चड करून ऑयस्टर अणमी वर्साचे 12 महिन्यांक खावंक मेळटात. हाची आनी म्हायती आमकां मॅक्सविन रिबेलो दिता. मॅक्सविन रिबेलो हाणे मास्टर्स इन सायन्स इन बायोटेक्नॉलॉजी शिकला आनी आतां आपले रिबेलो फार्म हांगा हे अणम्याच्या व्यवसायात गुंतलेले आसा.
ऑयस्टर मशरूम हाका डिग्री मशरूम म्हणतात. हे मशरूम रोवपाक आमकां चड मशिनाचे गरज ना. फकत जाय मशरूमाच्यो बियो आनी भाताचे तण. हे मशरूमाच्यो बियो आमकां एला फार्मांतल्यान मेळटा. आमी हे मशरूम आमच्या फार्मान रिबेलो फार्मान रोयतात. आमी 4 भाशेची ऑयस्टर मशरूम रोयतात म्हणल्यार व्हाईट ऑयस्टर मशरूम, ग्रे ऑयस्टर मशरूम, पिंक ऑयस्टर मशरूम आणि ब्लू ऑयस्टर मशरूम. हे ऑयस्टर मशरूम आम्ही सदांच खाल्ले जाल्यार आमकां विटामीन ए बी ई आणि के आणि वेगवेगळो मायक्रो न्युट्रियंट्स आणि कॅल्शियम चडांत चड प्रोटीन मेळटा. हाका एंटी कॅन्सराची प्रॉपर्टी बी आसा.
तर आयकोप्यानो जोरी तर तुमकां ताजी अणमी खावपाची रूच आयली जाल्यार रिबेलो फार्म हांगा मेळतात. देव बरे करू मॅक्सविन रिबेलो तुवें आमकां तुजो वेळ दिलो म्हूण. आनी आतां खेळा मैदानार इंडियन सुपर लीग हाच्यो गेम्यो सद्याक गोंयांत चालू आसा. भारताच्यो कांय नामनेच्यो टिम्यो हातून भाग घेतात आनी फुडल्या म्हयन्यांत गेमीचो फायनल जातल्यो. सद्याक एटीके मोहन बगान मुंबय सिटी FC, हैदराबाद FC, नॉर्थ इस्ट युनायटेड आनी FC गोवा पयल्यो 5 टिम्यो आसात. पूण सद्याक कोण जैतिवन जातलो आनी फायनलीक कोण पावतलो हाची म्हायती आमकां आदलो फुटबॉल खेळपी जो भारताक तशेंच साळगुंकर स्पोर्ट्स क्लबाक खेळून आपलें नांव जोडलां लॉरेन्स गोम्स आमकां लंडनच्या शारांसून आमकां सांगता.
जेन्ना इंडियन सुपर लीग 2020-21 सुरू जावची आसली नोव्हेंबरच्या म्हयन्यांत, तेन्ना म्हजे इश्ट तशेंच एक्स प्लेयर्स हे आमच्या लंडन शारांत UK म्हाका विचारांक लागले, अरे लॉरेन्स कोण जिखता हे पावटी ISL. तेन्ना म्हज्या मनांत विचार आयलो आनी हांवें तांकां सांगले, हे चार टिमी बऱ्यो आसात, मुंबय सिटी FC, ATK मोहन बागान, FC गोवा आनी बेंगालोरु. हे चार टिमींतलो दोन तरी टिमी फायनलीक पावत. जेन्ना म्हाका दिसले सर्जे लोबेरा जो FC गोवाचो कोच आसलो तो हे पावटी मुंबय सिटीक जॉयन जाला आनी ताच्या लागी बरे प्लेयर आसात, जशे पोरी अमरिंदर सिंग, हुगो मंदारराव देसाय, प्रॉब्लीन बॉजीस आनी एडम फोंद्रे. ATK मोहन बागाना जांच्या लागी अरिंदम भट्टाचार्या, एदू गार्सिया आनी हे पावटीचो हाय स्कोरर रॉय कृष्णा आसा. तशेंच FC गोवा लागीं एदू बेडिया, आल्बेर्टो नोगेरा आनी इगोर अंगुलो होय बरो स्कोरर जावन आसा. तसोच सुनील छेत्री बेंगलोरूक आसा. पूण जेन्ना आतां हे 3-4 राउंड उरल्या त्या प्रमाणे मुंबय सिटी अजूनच वयर आसात, ATK मोहन बागान, FC गोवा आसात तिसऱ्या जाग्यार. म्हाका दिसता हे पावटी फायनलीक मुंबय सिटी आनी FC गोवा हांच्या मदें जातली आनी हे पावटी चड करून FC गोवा जैतिवंत जावंक जायतो तांकां आदार आसा, ज्या परी फायनल आमच्या गोंया शारांत जातली अशी म्हाका दिसता आनी हांव बरो येव सावन येता आमच्या FC गोवा.
देव बरें करूं बाब लॉरेन्स गोम्स. येता त्या दिसांनी आमकां कळोन येतले कोण जैतिवंत जाता तें. तर आयकोप्यानो ह्यो जाण आसल्यो सुसेगाद दनपार गोंयच्यो खबरो. मेळूया दुसऱ्या सोमारांत, ते मेरेन मोग आसून दी.
नमस्कार आनी स्वागत करता हांव रुची तुमकां आयच्या सुशेगाद दनपार कोंकणी रेडियो प्रोग्रामार. हो आमी प्रोग्राम ब्रॉडकास्ट करता 104.6 प्लॅनेट FM वयर. म्हज्या सांगात आज आसा म्हजो दुसरो इस्ट बॅप्टिस्ट लोबो आनी आमचो गेस्ट अम्ब्रोस ब्लोफील. कसो आहे बॅप्टिस्ट तू आज?
हां बरो आहा रिची. तू
काले जेवलय? काले जेवलय दनपारां. काले
जेवलय आज हेल्दी जेवण आलले
वेगे
वेगे आनी दुसऱ्यांच्या घरा तर सनवारा रांदी ना ती गेतळ.
ओके ओके. तो तू आमकां तुझ्या गेस्टा विशीं कांय एक इल्ली परिचय दिताय?
वही हांव दितां.
ह्या प्रोग्रामा विशीं कांय सांगताय
सगळ्यांक? देव बरो दीस दिवं तुमकां. आनी आज आमच्या सांगात एक गेस्ट आसा. गेस्ट द गेस्ट इज फॅसिनेटिंग, इंटरेस्टिंग एन्ड व्हेरी एड्युकेटेड. He is one of the Australia's leading trainers and speakers in sales, marketing and business growth. He has worked in 4 continents, worked for a very leading global FMGC giant, Procter & Gamble. He has completed highest rated bilingual business degree in UK. He was one of the 15 chosen from the 3,000 people who went for that course. After finishing a degree, he came to Australia, worked for a recruitment company, Robert Half International. We must have heard the saying, jack of all, master of none. But we have got somebody here who is actually a master, running the sales mastery company. Ambrose worked for 2 years here in New Zealand and then decided it's too much, and he joined his wife. I don't know why, but yes, in 2005, he joined his wife at the marketing company. He has trained people all over the world in literally 5 continents. He is a business mentor with Business Mentors New Zealand over last 14 years. While he's not doing all this and not traveling, he spends time with his beautiful wife and 2 gorgeous daughters. I am pleased to welcome none other than Ambrose Blofield onto our SD program. I don't know, Ambrose, whether I have done justice to your profile, but welcome to SD program.
Bless you, bless you, bless you. Thank you, so much, Baptiste Lobo. It's a privilege and namaskar. Great to have you. Richard, lovely to meet you today. You more than did justice, to be honest. I always get embarrassed when people read the whole bio. I sent you the bio and hoped you'd only take one small snippet from it. So my life sounds so interesting when you explain it like that.
Absolutely.
So Ambrose, I think Baptiste has covered such a lot about your bio. Tell me what interested you into a sales program, because having had 2 degrees from some of the well-known universities in UK and in Switzerland, what prompted you to take selling as a profession?
Great question, Richard. I think for me, my greatest love in the world is people. And growing up, I was born in the UK, but raised in Geneva, Switzerland, which is the home for World Health Organization, which many people look to today. Obviously, United Nations. So most of my friends were from all over the world. They had stories from the world. So for me, I've forever been fascinated about people, what motivates people, what makes them tick, what keeps them inspired. And when I grew up, most of my friends were asked, you know, what do you want to be? And they'd say airline pilot or policeman or fireman or whatever they decided to do was quite macho. And for me, from a young age, you know, 7, 8, 9 years old, it was just, I want to travel the world. I literally knew at primary school, all I wanted to do is go around the world. And my happy place in the world, to be honest, is going to a local market in the middle of nowhere and watching humans interact. And sales, to me, is the career you build if you love people and you want to understand what makes people motivated.
In your travels, you said you went to India. Tell us something about it.
Oh, well, look, I'll specifically focus on Goa, if I may. I've been fortunate enough in my life to spend 3 months of my life in India altogether. I've been from, you know, the bottom left of Kerala to the top right of Darjeeling and Sikkim and towards the top left of Rajasthan down to Chennai. And Goa I will focus on because you and I were talking off air, yep. Baptist. My father-in-law loves spicy food. Yep. For British-raised people, we like spicy food, and maybe not Indian spicy food. And our penultimate night in Goa, we said to them, look, obviously vindaloo being world famous, we should try the vindaloo. Can you make sure it's spicy? So they served it spicy. And we went back on our last night and said, look, I'm sorry, but what you did with your vindaloo last night was not spicy enough. So then they stepped it up and served us a tindaloo. Now, that was not on the menu. What the chef said, what came out and delivered it to us in person, he said two things. This is the curry I would eat. And secondly, I'm not allowed to serve it here, and you're only allowed to share a curry. Now, my father and I were eating spicy food 3 meals a day for the whole week. We could barely eat the whole meal. It was the hottest curry of my life. I'm forever grateful to Goa for that.
Fantastic.
So, you spend a lot of time with Procter & Gamble.
Yes.
As a part of their selling
machine.
Selling machine.
Yes. Let's call it that.
How good is their product?
Their products are well above average, like a lot of fast-moving consumer good products around the world, whether that's Procter & Gamble or Unilever. But what sets them apart, similar to the McDonald's and the Coca-Colas of the world, is, in my opinion, people like Procter & Gamble and Colgate-Palmolive and Unilever and Johnson & Johnson and McDonald's and everyone else, they are world-class at marketing and selling their product.
So if they're so good, why do they require salespeople?
Because from their business model perspective, they sell business to business. So the marketing department's main aim is to generate the need or the desire for the shampoo or the floor cleaner. And they market to the end user or the consumer. And the salespeople need to get those products on the shelves through the distribution networks worldwide to make sure that when the marketing demand comes through, the product's available and it has pride of place in the supermarket or the drugstore or chemist around the world.
So where do you start this process of selling? Is it that, you know, there is already a list or there's already a contact point where the organization has created? Or is it that you start right from the beginning where it has to start? So are you thrown at the deep end of the sea, or are you asked to serve the existing market channels?
Are you referring to Procter & Gamble here?
Yes, basically, yeah.
So for them, they're a very established company. They're 170 years old. For the market I joined, I was very fortunate also that, A, they allowed me to take a year to travel the world before joining them. And also, I was given the privilege of choosing which division I joined. So had I chosen the shampoo and beauty market, it's a very established market. You're selling through drugstores and chemist chains and existing grocery chains across the UK. I chose the away-from-home market because it was more challenging and I knew that the training was 2 to 3 times quicker if I went into that market. So my job in the early days was to find rest homes, pubs, clubs, hospitals and hotels, and to try to persuade them to use our cleaning products for cleaning their laundry or cleaning the floors or cleaning their kitchens. But we couldn't supply them directly. So having done that, then we had to make sure that the local distributor who carried our product could then serve them. So it was almost a double sell. And my role was to create that initial demand, to feed it through, and then actually to develop the sellers from those distribution centers so they could go and sell my product for me.
So if I may ask you, why I'm asking you this question is that a lot of our community members are into small businesses. Mm-hmm. Some are just setting them up. Some are already there. But one of the biggest challenges is to promote their products.
Yes.
And to get it out to a wider market. So, you know, you don't get into the mainstream, you don't make money.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Catering to just a small community really doesn't help the economics of it. So yes. My basic idea about understanding or rather making our community members understand is, how do you go through this process of selecting? Who do you sell? In the case of Procter & Gamble, you were with the cleaning division. Mm-hmm. Some of our community members are into food. Others are into services of home goods or accounting services and so on and so forth. So how do you go about identifying your customer base?
That's a fantastic question. What I'll do is I'll skip my Procter & Gamble days and focus on what I've been doing for the last 16 years, which is serving small to medium businesses worldwide. And our customers are accountants and web designers, and they are food producers and manufacturers. And, you know, 99% of our customers for the last 16 years are under 50 staff, and many of them are sort of 1 to 15. So let's talk about that. And that's probably more of a marketing question, in my opinion, than sales. Every business on planet Earth has one thing in common in my belief system, which is it is there to serve someone. And the someone happens to be a customer in some form. So either that'll be an individual, or it'll be an organization or a charity or the government potentially. But you've got to get clear about who you serve. And what I'd say to a lot of people, if you want to stay motivated in business, and business is hard, you know, the failure rate in Australasia of businesses is 92% in the first 5 years, meaning 1 in 12 people survive. So you have to establish a market. You have to be passionate about the people you serve. We love, my wife and I love serving small to medium business. That's what gets us out of the bed. I came, as you said, from a large corporate. They don't need my help to make more money, nor do Coca-Cola or McDonald's or anyone else. So the biggest thing to understand, and New Zealand, we have the small market issue as well. We're 5 million in the population here in New Zealand. So even if you dominate New Zealand, 5 million is still not a big global market versus 8 billion humans. So you've got to get very specific and very clear on who your customer is. And in my opinion, you have to really love that customer or respect or like that customer base.
Okay. What makes your business so unique in the sense you give a lot of training, but there would be something which is, there are many training organizations, but yours is something different from them. And how different is it?
Yeah, thanks, Baptiste. I think for us at salesmasterycompany.com is we realized when we were training across four continents of the world, both live in person, but also going via webinars and obviously live streaming nowadays since the COVID world. What we found was the frustration for salespeople who are selling either their own business or they're selling someone else's business if they're a team of maybe four or six salespeople, is normally when we run the training and we ask for people for feedback afterwards, 50% of people would go, wow, that's amazing. That's the best course I've ever learned. And then 50% of people would say to us something like, either that was too advanced for me or it was too junior for me. And what we found with technology, we made the decision 5 years ago to really develop the online side of our training. So what we've developed is a unique 12-month program. I did, as Richard said, get trained very heavily from Procter & Gamble. So I took on board the structure of how they did my training there. And we produced a 12-month program that is personalized. So it's personalized based on somebody's natural energy or personality. It's personalized on whether they're advanced or they're only junior to intermediate sales. It's personalized, to go back to Richard's question, on whether they sell to existing customers or whether they just focus on new customers or a combination. And we've even personalized it whether they sell on the phone or face-to-face or a combination. So in year one alone, there's 100 pathways people can go down. And we don't know of a program in the world that has 100 pathways for year one. And by the end of the 3 years, if they stay on the program for 3 years, there's over 1 million pathways of learning that is unique to them. And that's very different.
Oh, so there is a very blurred line between sales and marketing.
Yes, and we've taught on both, Richard. Go ahead.
So, yeah. You know, there's a lot of confusion in the minds of people. Sometimes they say, oh, I have been trying to sell and trying to sell. Basically what they're saying, I've been trying to market and
correct.
Trying to market.
Yeah.
Okay, so can you elucidate or can you educate us on what's the difference between sales and marketing?
100%. I love this topic. I've been flown around the world to deliver on this topic, Richard. Okay, so the way to think about marketing, and my wife and I were published in the UK with a small book on how to write a marketing plan called The Authority Guide on Writing a Marketing Plan. It was published a few years ago, and the way we defined it in that is simple. Let's start. It actually starts with marketing, not sales. So there's two sides to marketing. There's the marketing proposition. And the marketing proposition is the side of marketing that is strategic and planned. So that is deciding, as Richard said before, who are you going to sell your product to? What will your price point be? Where will you sit in the marketplace? Essentially, your marketing proposition defines who you are, what you do, and how you do it. For example, you know, we decide we're going to sell motor cars and we're going to be Toyota level in the middle of the market, or we're going to decide to be Mercedes, which is towards the top, or we're going to be at the top of the market, say Rolls-Royce or Bentley. And so all of that is part of your marketing strategy. So things like market research, understanding your customer, understanding your competitors, all of that defines your marketing proposition. The second side of marketing, which is what we typically have spent time training and coaching people on around the world, although it's not where I spend most of my life now, is marketing communication. So to go back to the words you just said there, Richard, most people say, I'm trying to sell my product. And what they're saying actually is, I'm trying to improve my marketing communication. And within marketing communication, the challenges people have is, of course, there's digital and non-digital. In a non-digital world, that may be your logo and your design and your business cards. It also includes your networking and meeting people. And on the digital side, obviously, websites and social media and such like. And the way to summarize marketing communication, in my words, would be that marketing communication is how do you tell the world how great you are? And then here's the million-dollar conversation that even when we train salespeople these days, they get angry when I tell them this, which is actually sales is a subset of marketing communication. It is the human-to-human side of marketing communication. So to go back to what Richard said before, in a small community like New Zealand, like the Konkan community, like any community worldwide, when people are together, sales becomes a huge part of your marketing communication, because relationships, I wouldn't say are everything, but they're almost everything. They're a huge part. You have to be ethical. You have to stand by your word. You have to show integrity.
And Sorry.
And how much has the social media affected both marketing and selling? Because I feel a lot of people say, I have been on Facebook, Twitter, and all the other social media, and I'm getting a lot of hits, and I'm converting a lot of the hits, basically. Mm-hmm. And I don't need selling. Mm-hmm. Do you agree with that kind of a concept?
Well, of course, Baptist, I'm never going to agree with a concept that says I don't believe I have to sell. Let me define to my response to that. So the first thing is, in its essence, all selling is about really asking great questions to listen to the specific needs of the customer and then providing them with a product or service that solves that problem or solves that need. So there'll always be a moment in the sales process or the marketing process where you have to reach an agreement, and that's where sales sits. To go back to your question around social media, it comes down to my principle in business, which is we're all in business to serve others. If your customers spend time on social media, and of course there's 50 mainstream social media platforms, there's hundreds of non-mainstream platforms. If your customers are on social media, you should be on that channel of social media. If your customers are not, and we've got about half our business globally is with one particular kind of section of the business community who don't spend life outside of LinkedIn. So I have to serve that community, spend a lot of time in LinkedIn as my main social media because that's half my income comes from it.
Yep. Okay.
So before we take a break, I'll just give you a small proposition so that you
go ahead.
Think during the break and tell us how to go about it. You've been in Goa, right? And you've eaten some of the spiciest food that you have ever
eaten. Absolutely.
So there's a product called chorizo. Mm-hmm. Have you heard about the Goan sausages?
No.
Okay. So chorizo is the...
But is it like a Hispanic or Portuguese sausage? The chorizo sausage they have. So I've not tried Goan.
Yes.
So chorizo is something which is which Goans are very passionate about, and they have a product here which they sometimes serve us during our community gatherings. It's called chorispao, which is Goan sausages in a rolled bread as such. Now, what's happened is lots of Goans here in the community have worked out different ways of creating those Goan sausages here from local products, but doesn't really come very close to it. But some of them have managed to crack that.
Okay.
But the challenge is to get it across to the rest of the community. And so I leave this proposition to you as to if they have got the product right and if they are really good, how do they market it and make it as a mainstream product, like the biltongs of the South Africans? So I leave that with you.
Thank you, Richard.
And
we'll have a song.
On that note, we'll just listen to a song.
Bori chedwa तातुन वाटो गेता जी कोन ये तात्या छेडवा संसार बोर्दा कोईता उने छेडू माद्र जाल्या कोंटा छे फोटो शाप्ता आईसे कांतार मुनो माद्री सोगडा स्कोर्ता बोर्या तान चाबावरा
Welcome back to Sushashaka Dhanpar. You are listening to Sushashaka Dhanpar on 104.6 Planet FM. You have been listening to Amrose blabbering about sales. And I hope you have got some value out of it up till now. But you'll have more value coming through because there's a fantastic question which Richard has asked. Amrose, all to you now.
Well, just to rephrase and just to reiterate, my question is that chorizo is a very, very popular dish among the Goans, mm-hmm. Very liked and sort of owned by them.
Yes.
And there are many of them who are producing their local chorizos here in New Zealand. One of the biggest challenges to them is to get it into the mainstream, yep. Not only to sell it to the local community, but how to get it into the mainstream.
That's a really great question. So to me, I'll go back to what I said in the first part of this interview is to say the purpose of any business is to serve its customers. So what the producer of such a unique product like that, and by the way, as I said off air, I'm salivating trying to source one now because it sounds so delicious. And to me, travel is all about the food and the culture and the food combined. To me, there's two things. The quality of the product those people need to produce for a highly judgmental local market that they want a taste of home, that product might be different to how do they break the market. So one of their biggest challenge will almost be a philosophical or an emotional one, which will be how do we get mainstream Kiwis, let's say, yep. to want to buy this product, which could be the best sausage type product they've ever tasted in their lives. But it may not be the same as the Goan. And that's probably a big challenge because I think a lot of our business owners we've coached around the world, and it's been over 10,000 over the years, you know, they're so obsessed about their own product and they say, I've got to have the best product. It's like, no, you've got to sell and market the best product. You've got to be the best at selling and marketing. So this is what I'd recommend this person does. They need to take their product to the market. And the way they should do that is literally take it to markets and events, whether that's having a stand or a caravan or going to the multi-ethnic nightly markets they've got for the food markets and get the product into the hands of people and try various different formulas till they find a taste that will sell. That may not be the same taste, however, as the highly respected local community will want, who want a taste of home. And so I guess similar to the biltongs you mentioned off air as well, the market for biltong in South Africa, the tastes are subtly different to the tastes that sell best in New Zealand. So if you want to make money at a business, you have to produce the product and then test it on your market, get feedback, adapt it, and give people what they want to pay for. And if you do that, you become very successful in business.
What you're saying is that have different kind of product basically, but within that product have various toned down versions which would be accepted by the local.
I mean, we say toned down because off air, obviously, you said it was spicy.
Yeah.
To me, New Zealand's typical demanded food is blander than most parts of the world. That's why I'm so happy that New Zealand has such a diverse immigration policy, because otherwise the food here would be very British and very boring.
Boring.
And I didn't emigrate for boring. So to me, the biggest thing is meet the market. And so if you look at any Gordon Ramsay videos of him reviving restaurants, one of the breakthrough moments in a restaurant or any food-based businesses, you've got to get your product into the hands of your customers. If it's an amazing product you know they'll like, that's to draw them in. It's marketing, as Richard said before, and it draws them to your, in his case, pubs and restaurants in the UK. But if the market then gives you feedback and says, this is too spicy for me, or I don't like a particular herb in it, or there's something else, you now have a choice to make. Will you be authentic to the recipe that you were taught by your grandmother and you want to make no money? or do you want to make money? Now, of course, over time, as I've seen living in New Zealand for almost 20 years now, actually a country in one generation of 20 years, it can change its palate.
Yep.
And it can allow for more diverse. I remember, you know, being in New Plymouth years ago and people, you know, there was no Thai restaurants. And we just left a street living in Sydney where there were 30 Thai restaurants just in that street. So they all had to be great. And in New Plymouth, there was zero. And I remember we used to drive to Whanganui for 2 hours just to have Thai food. So what I'd say here is get your product into hands of your customers and listen. And to me, if I tie back from marketing, which is that is back to sales, the most important skill in sales is the ability to listen.
So, you know, most ethnic communities, they just want to replicate what they have back home.
Yes.
Okay. And as you rightly said, listening to the customer is a very, very important aspect of marketing.
Mm-hmm.
So if I understand you right, what you're saying is there are a couple of channels that they need to explore.
Correct.
One is the night markets that you're talking about.
Yes.
The other is events, food events that are there, which are held, or maybe what's called as a farmer's market.
Yes, exactly that.
Okay.
Get your product into try to do deliveries into businesses. You've got to get your product into people's hands, or how else will they know it? If they don't have a connection to Goa, they're not going to have a long lost dream of the, I wonder if there's a sausage based product from, you know, Southwest India. I'm sure there is. They're never going to do that. So you've got to get your product in front of your customers. And what I will say, I believe food is a huge part of culture and it's a huge part of people's identity worldwide. That's why I love to travel. And the product that they make to, I guess, emotionally tie back to their heritage might well be a different product to the one that they sell to a mass public. And if I went back to the Coca-Colas and the McDonald's and the Procter & Gamble scenario, they sell above average products en masse. They really don't care about the quality of their product. It's got to be good, but it doesn't have to be perfect.
So what tips would you like to give people who have, of course, now chorizo is one part of it. Mm-hmm. We have got many other people in business who are trying to grow.
Yes.
Okay, and again, they are not getting into the mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
But you did tell us that they have to listen to the customer and things like that. Is there any other way, rather, listening is one part of it, is there any other aspects which they have to look at to grow from where they are at the present moment?
Yeah, I think that's a really great question, Baptist. What I would say is they do need to be clear on how much they want to grow.
Yeah.
So there's no point, as you know, from, you know, the tax accounting side of business that you spend your life with, you've got to have a clear plan. You know, how big do you want to get? How big is going to suit with your family dynamic? Are you trying to double? Are you trying to quadruple? Or you just want 10% more? So you've got to be very clear on that. Then you have to break it down and go, okay, so how many customers do I actually need to achieve that? And if you're trying to have a part-time business, then you don't want 10 times more customers, because then you're growing for the sake of growing and you're going to lose quality of life. And what's great for those of us who've emigrated to New Zealand, which all three of us have, we like the quality and lifestyle here.
Yep.
And so you don't want to give that up. So get clear on your targets. Get clear on how many customers you got. Then think about, you know, where are they based? How do they shop? You know, what do they wake up and think about? What are their challenges in life, not just with that product or service? You mentioned, Richard, before with accounting services. You know, accounting, you know, you can buy from a lot of different people. And nowadays you can outsource it, you know, online to people around the world for the basic compliance accounting. So then, as I know Baptist does, you've got to start thinking about, well, how am I different? What do I do in my conversations with my customers? And obviously, Baptist, you're a master in that tax space. You know, how do I add value by asking those two questions the customer may be uncomfortable with, but they're two of the most intelligent questions they get asked all year. Any business, in my opinion, has got to differentiate all the time. And it may not be differentiation of the standard product or service. It's often in the conversations they have. It's in their intelligence that they share. And sometimes it's the free advice that they give.
So let's get to a little bit of the ethics side of selling.
Yes.
You know, they say never shake hands with a motor car dealer. Okay. Or
motor car salesperson, basically. They say
motor car dealer or salesperson. They say the insurance agent tells you least of the troubled areas, but tells you more of the what the product is about. So in this whole game of selling, there is an art of what to reveal and not to reveal, so that you can sell the product. What is your thoughts about in this training process? What do you teach? What technique do you teach?
Okay, so if I may, I'll split your question into two, because again, you've asked a double question, Richard. You asked about ethics. So to me, a business, even if it's a small startup business or, you know, a business with 100,000 workers, you've got to have core values. That's part of business planning. That defines the culture of the business. It defines who you recruit, how you act day to day. So for us as a business, you know, giving is a core value. So we will always be giving with our time. We'll always support multiple charitable causes. That's what gets us out of bed in the morning, and we won't ever compromise on that. So that's around morals and ethics. There's certain sectors and industries that we don't want to help grow because we don't think they have a positive impact on the world necessarily. So that's the ethics side. Understand your core values, understand your principles. And many times for a small business, that will be the principles of the husband and wife owner. You know, who they are as a family will often reflect on their principles and ethics at work. If they don't have any at home, they probably won't have any at work, is what I'm saying. Now let's talk to what you're saying in sales. When you're selling, I think a lot of people assume when they think about used car sales dealers around the world who get a bad rap globally, or maybe sellers in Manhattan and New York who are very pushy, those are the people who are in the movies. And they talk a lot, like a lot of lawyers on the shows, and they talk at people. And what we need to understand, particularly in places like New Zealand and Australia and smaller communities in the world, that doesn't work. So watching a movie thinking, I'm going to be the Wolf of Wall Street, or I'm going to talk like a Manhattan, that does not work unless you are selling in Wall Street in Manhattan. What matters more, as we talked about before, is the ability to ask great questions, to understand what the customer wants to hear from you. And if you can deliver a product and service that is aligned to their wants and needs, then you tell them, I can help you. If what they're asking for you cannot do, it will never work long term for you to falsely sell something that isn't fundamentally going to serve their problems or needs. And to me, in the short term, yep, absolutely, you could hoodwink them and con them into buying your product. But within about a day, they're already twittering it out or sharing it on Facebook or Instagram or TikTok. They've shared it in a community verbally, and you'll kill your business overnight. So it forces you in a small community to be ethical.
So you have this huge advertising blitz in New Zealand by retail chains,
yes,
like Pack and Save or Woolworths, making a huge blitz.
Yes.
$2.99. Buy today, $3.99, buy today. And you know fully well that these are either products which are close to the expiry date.
Yes.
Or they are not the same in measurement. Mm-hmm. So they say, hey, basmati rice is $3.99.
Yes. Yep.
Whereas the guy down the road is selling you at $4.99, and you know fully well he's selling 500 grams, and and the guy who's advertising for $3.99 is selling for 400 grams.
Yes.
So, you know, this sort of advertising blitz that is there in New Zealand, it's huge. Every day it is there on news everywhere. How ethical do you think is this part of sales with what you're talking about?
Well, firstly, I think that's marketing, not sales. What you're talking about, advertising is a subset of marketing, not a subset of sales.
Okay.
I don't think it's an ethical issue. All they're doing is creating an excitement for somebody around that product. And when it comes to rice, and you happen to pick my favorite grain of rice, I love basmati rice, it's my favorite worldwide, but you know, you are picking something that if you can get somebody to buy more of that product, it then sits in somebody's shelf. It's easier to remind a consumer that that's the brand that I buy. And once you stock up on rice, for example, unlike biscuits, you're not going to eat it all straight away. So it's very strategic at a marketing level that they would do that. What I would say, going back to your comment around farmers markets for smaller products, is the world in the last 20 years, and as any community and economy gets richer, it is happy to pay a premium price. And one common mistake I see from food producers and even service providers is they often underprice. And even though it could be a dollar cheaper down the road, actually, if I like you, I'll probably spend a dollar on you. Mm. I would also say that what we've seen globally in the post-COVID world, more push for buying local and more push for buying from small stores, because what people's realized with the lockdowns around the world was, if I don't spend money in that restaurant, it will die. So if I want that restaurant to survive, it's my duty of care to spend money. That was the first thing we did as a family post-lockdown, was the moment takeaways opened up, we said to our kids, which businesses would you like to support? We're four people in our family, and we went to three different takeaways, because our kids had a preferred takeaway, I had a preferred takeaway, my wife had a preferred takeaway, and it wasn't just the food. We wanted to support the business and the family. We felt that was our duty. The first day we were allowed to go to a restaurant, we went to the same place. We all agreed these guys deserve our money. I think in the post-COVID world, certainly it's my hope, that that legacy lasts, that people choose to spend money ethically to support local family businesses.
So you're against globalization in some way?
I'm not anti-globalization. I'm pro helping to support businesses that are more refined with their product, that have a more personal relationship with their community, have a more personal relationship with their customer, and ones where, as my customers have been for the last 17 years, as ones where you can see the impact of your money. It provides a kid fees to university or for the family to go on holiday. I'm not anti anything. I'm just pro small to medium businesses because they work so hard.
You talked about saying that the buyer gives you signals or tells you what they want. Mm-hmm. But in certain products, buyer is not aware, like for insurance, mm-hmm. yes. as Richard said. People just go and say, you need an insurance, you're going to get heart attack, or you're going to get mm-hmm. cancer, you're going to get this, that, mm-hmm. that, and sell the medical insurance. But mm-hmm. they do not say the downside is when you actually get it, mm-hmm. you will not get the claim mm-hmm. or something like that on those lines. Mm-hmm. Most of the people buy it because they are fear factor. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, that's where ethics comes in.
Yes.
And that's where the salesperson has to be upfront and say, yes, you do this, you will get your claim. Mm-hmm. And how you get your claim, it is left to me. Whatever happens, I am there for you.
Yep.
So that doesn't happen in most of the insurance selling.
I can't agree with you there, I'm so sorry to say.
Yeah.
I agree that what you've described there is something that has gone on the world over.
Yeah.
My experience of being around in countless insurance people, hundreds over the years, they've been through our programs, we spent actually most are very ethical, they have a compliance requirement to be revealing. However, I agree that just like as Richard said before, used car salesmen are the world over typically have a bad rap. You'll notice it's car salesman. Mm. No one complains about females who sell cars.
Yep.
That doesn't mean that every single person who sells a car is unethical. Yep. It's just easy to generalize around that. Look, I would agree with you. I would say to you always, if you're going to work with an insurance broker, work with someone who's part of a group where there's a brand reputation they have to protect. And therefore, they may not protect it because they're driven by ethics, but they might be protecting it from the basis of a brand. But my experience of insurance has been great. I mean, all of my life. So
we have very limited time.
Sure.
What we will do is we will sort of ask you how you would like our community to benefit from the services that you are offering.
Mm-hmm.
What are the products that you've got? Where can they source it? And what sort of a hand-holding that you can do to achieve the outcomes that you believe that some of those businesses
do. You want to take a break and
we will then run out of time.
Okay.
So because we run a song now.
Yeah, then
we will,
yes.
So we will have this and then we will run the songs
song.
Right through.
Yeah. Yep.
Good on you, Richard. So really a couple of things. So firstly, from a free perspective, if someone visits our website, which is salesmasterycompany.com, there are some free tools there. There are blogs written, all of them there to provide free advice. If people register for our newsletter, we provide free monthly videos and tips and tricks. So anyone in the startup phase where they don't have a budget to invest in themselves, let us help them because we want the world to be prosperous. So that's the first thing. If people are wanting to invest in themselves and into their business, the two main programs we specialize in, one is our 12-month sales mastery program, which, as I said, is personalized. And the hand-holding comes in two forms. One, we drip-feed personalized training every single week to them that they do in their own time. And then the hand-holding comes where every month we're live, twice a month live, so they can come to live training, live coaching, ask questions. They can say, I've done this and this didn't work, I've done this, this worked well, how do I do more of it? Or I've got a tricky customer, I'm trying to, you talk about, you know, Pack and Save or Foodstuffs and likewise Woolworths, you know, I'm trying to land them next week, how do I go about that? So that program, the Sales Mastery Program, is not only unique, but it provides the best support. The other program that people often start with us is a unique 10-step process for how do you have a business-to-business conversation with a customer, and that's our unique persuasive selling process. And people can access that online. We don't handhold through that, but they can learn the fundamentals of preparing for meetings, controlling with conversations, reading personality profiles, handling objections, and closing. So if people were to use us at the Sales Mastery Company, it's either our Sales Mastery Program for 12 months or the persuasive selling process.
How do they contact you? Is there a phone number?
Phone number on the website. You can fill in a contact us form. You can send us an email. Or I'm Ambrose Blowfield on LinkedIn. And thankfully, with a unique name like that, there is only one.
So it's easy.
So is it something that you modified, or is it came down the ancestry?
In terms of the content?
No, Blowfield.
Bless you for that. So there is a good name behind that. So ambrosia is the food of the Greek gods, and Ambrose is the male derivative of that. And Blowfield actually comes from a small village in East Anglia, in the east of Britain, which is called Blowfield. Now, my family 1,000 years ago added a W, but the village exists, and one day I'd like to take my kids on some pilgrimage to see the combination of that.
So some sort of a similarity between in Kerala, where people may have their last name after their after their village from where they come from.
Yes.
In addition to the name of their father, so they have this. So it was a great joy for us to have you on the program and to give us a few tips around selling and making the distinction between selling, marketing, and then talking about ethics. Surely, I think a couple of guys will come to you with the solution to the chorizos.
Perfect.
Definitely. And thank you so much for agreeing to be on our show, and we loved every bit of it. Thank you very much, Ambrose.
Thank you.
देव कोणूय वत्तात ओडून पाद्री वसले धोर्मीक शिको ब्रादरान करूंक ना पयली हाडू आयज तेच लोकांक वत्तात ओडून पाद्रीची बेपरवा करून कितले प्रोटेस्टियन जाल्यात ब्रादरांचो सांगा सोडून टिवीचेर रेटीर जाता मिस नाका घरांत रावया रेटीर रांगचे व्हड मेळटा चल तर तुय चोरतावया आवडटा तो दोन तो हे सोत मारून घेवया पावडटा आसल्यार देव सोगल्या आसा जाणा जावया इग्रोस माती कोमियाव क्रिस्मु आवे घेतलो तो दोनीचे शिकोणेन काळजा बांधल्यान उतराचे मुनयेन मोठोच कूड पुतात मातयेन तोर इग्रोस माते कोशे विसरोंक जाता क्रिस्ती पोरचे कोवी सोबेग दुगोयल्या मुनीस बरोन गोरवान क्रिस्ती पोरचे कोडोयता ओतमे पळोंक पाडटा दोनी मुनीस येतेले लोता पुरी पुस्तका जप जपता ते भांगार ओपार दोरात मोना मार दर्शन घेवन ब्रादरांनी रेतीर पोरचे मोगा क्रिस्ती धर्माकांनी पाडली ओरी नासा भोगमा
Con bien sorvat che le haga lungsa sopot ai la raja sopot ai la raja fatore cha con bien sorvat che le haga lungsa sopot ai la raja sopot ai la raja Mom